Welcome to the Go Health podcast. I am Gillian Strain, Chief Exec of Go Health, an organization with a vision to enable churches and individual Christians to be a healing presence in the world. And in recent episodes of the podcast and in our Go Health community, we've been deepening our understanding of what it means to find healing by exploring our past and the ways that history impacts on our flourishing today. And, you know, we've included lots of different topics. We've looked at structural injustice, genetics, psychotherapy, lots of different angles. So in this final episode of the Healing History series, we're chatting with Ian Spencer to explore how to make a little sense of this by bringing it back to where we can make a difference in the world, in our own lives, right, and in particularly in our bodies. So Ian, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Thank you very much, Julian. I'm very well, thank you.
I'm really pleased you're joining us on the podcast. I'm really excited to chat to you today because you've got a whole bunch of different strings to your bow, don't you, Ian? Correct me if I'm wrong, Anglican priest, yoga teacher, spiritual director and former director of Holland House, which is a retreat house, isn't it? Now you run something called Mindwell Ministries. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about your vision for Mindwell, how you combine all the stuff you've done in your past, all your wisdom? What is Mindwell and how do you work with people today?
Thank you for asking me that. When I retired from my work as the warden of Holland House after being there for 14 years, I wanted to continue some kind of ministry, being an ordained person, but also having had some freedom within the space of a retreat house to explore spirituality in perhaps some wider and deeper contexts. And so what I wanted to do was offer spiritual direction or spiritual accompaniment, I prefer to call it, meditation, yoga, some of the insights that Zen gives us into human nature. And when I looked at all of that, it seemed to be a decent summary to call it Mindwell, because in the end, everything points towards the mind. And it seems to me that if our minds are well, everything is well. So that's why I called it.
But incorporating the body as well, I guess, if you do yoga, so you're sort of right there in the title.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons why I started looking at yoga and ended up, I didn't set out to become a yoga teacher, but I just got entranced by it and kept going from one course to the next. And it was about, you know, it's just well over 1,000 hours of being taught, was that, you know, after many years of being a Christian, I just felt that the body was rather excluded from it all a lot of the time, or even worse in some cases. And yet yoga practice is very inclusive. It's very holistic. And if you're going to have a well mind, then it needs to be in touch with the body. It doesn't necessarily need to have a well, in inverted commas, body, but you do need to love it. Yeah. and be with it. Yeah. Because you can't be anywhere else, actually.
And I kind of want to ask you before we start, I just want people to get a sense of your vision, Ian, I guess, because we work together, we've been friends for a while. And I was thinking before we recorded this morning, the first time I properly met you, I've met you before, then I had lunch with you, do you remember, in Holland House? Uh-huh. And we started talking and you said something, well, you know, humans have been around longer than the church. Yeah. And then we chatted about that. And then we talked about human evolution and the spiritual life. Uh-huh. And one of those kind of head exploding conversations like, oh, I never thought about it like that. And then I knew I wanted to get to know you better, right, and work with you. So what inspires you spiritually today?
Right now, I'm really inspired by and interested in the whole subject of the relationship between consciousness and matter, I guess, because the church and indeed a lot of religion over the years tends to split those two things out, tends to, you know, spirituality and stuff tends to be set apart. And so anything that puts these things back together again and celebrates them and encourages us to put them back again, celebrate them, I find inspiring. So, I mean, really, you know, the Celtic tradition was my first introduction to, oh, God's kind of maybe a bit bigger than the old boy on a cloud with a beard with a clipboard looking at me all the time and wondering if I'm doing good or bad things, that actually then the Franciscan tradition, where Francis talks about brother, son, sister, moon. And I decided that he wasn't talking poetically about those things, that he actually meant them, that these things really, really are his actual brothers and sisters. It's not a metaphor. It's a kind of scientific, spiritual fact. And that gets me excited and got me excited. And then onwards and upwards from there then. So it's, I mean, yoga is a very natural segue, you know, from there. And so is Zen. And so is, of course, the wonderful and beautiful Christian contemplative tradition that we have, you know, but has been, you know, largely sidelined for many years.
Okay, well, you know, let's stay with this. This kind of sticking together all of stuff with our consciousness and who we are today. The big split wasn't there in the scientific revolution. Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. And, you know, that was one of the more modern iterations of separation between mind and body. But it goes much further back, doesn't it? If we sort of stick with the Christian tradition, there is a really, sad doesn't really cover it, to be honest, a desperate history within Christian thought, where the body is treated with a huge degree of suspicion, even denigration. You know, I'm thinking now of the idea that our bodies are sinful, that they do things, they are a thing that keeps us away from connecting with God.
Particularly women's bodies, by the way.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I'm building up to that. Particularly women's body. That's okay. Yeah. We're on the same page. Clamping down on any kind of pleasure. You know, some of these ascetic practices, you know, punishing your body in order to get closer to God. This seems massively at odds with some of what you're saying. Why have we got this inheritance, do you think, Ian?
Well, I think it's quite complex. And I think there's been a lot of books written by people far more probably brighter than I am on the subject. But it seems to me that really the dualistic split, it is probably as a result of Greek influence on early Christian thought, really. And so there's been this idea that's permeated our tradition that somehow matter, all bodies, all forms, are just getting in the way of the fulfillment of our spiritual inheritance, that actually somehow matter curtails and confines. And that it's really only when we actually physically die that we kind of have a fulfillment, which, you know, is ridiculous, really, when you think about it. But sadly, it's the way it's been portrayed. So ideas really like we have a soul, which is kind of posted into this form called a human body, and then rattles around in it for years, trying to get out one way or another. And finally, hallelujah, we die. And it can go back home to, you know, fulfill itself. Really? Really? That's, you know, God gave us all these prisons to walk around in, did he? She? It? So,
Is it just they just get in the way, or do they actively lead us astray? I mean, it's...
It's that as well, of course, particularly, you know, within the sexual environment, but also, you know, all of the desires, if you like, you know, so anything, you know, even food and drink, that our bodies are getting in the way, are actively leading us away from the fulfillment of what it is to be truly human, whereas it's the complete inverse. So that would be my take on it, that we've kind of inherited this dualistic split from ideas of a difference between body and spirit.
And if we're overcoming this, at what point do you put in sort of boundaries to that? You know, is there a sense there should be some discipline around our desires, our, you know, our appetites and all the rest of it around the flesh and body? Is it about forming a different relationship?
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, yoga, for a start, is very keen on understanding this relationship and working with it. But it's about a healthy relationship between the two, and it's about respect. And in the end, it's about loving the body and loving the spirit and loving the mind, such that we work to reduce its suffering and its harm. You know, in other words, harming other creatures and harming ourselves. So in yoga, for instance, there's a whole limb of yoga called Pratyahara, which nobody much speaks about. You won't hear it in many village halls on a wet Wednesday night when the You know, everybody's out practicing their postures. But pratyahara is all about working with our senses.
Our senses.
You know, the five senses. Yeah. And actually bring the gateway, you know, a conscious gateway to the senses so that we're not pulled around by them mindlessly into all sorts of areas which actually cause us harm.
And within the Christian tradition, Ian, where do you see good practices around overcoming this dualism between our bodies and our minds so that we can access or experience that love that you're talking about?
That's a good question, isn't it? to be fair, I didn't find much. This is probably why I spent thousands of hours learning yoga rather than I didn't find it much in my Christianity that came through church. It's not that it was, you know, the churches I've been involved in were actively denigrating. They just didn't focus on it much. We do have something. It's called incarnation, right? Mm. It's at the very heart of our tradition, incarnation. Mm. And we're not incarnated into an evil matrix that we call body and form. The incarnation is an exquisite manifestation of the power, the glory, and the love of God. Every single body, not just mine, which it is, of course, but everybody's yours, mine, anybody that's listening to this podcast. If they look out the window, they'll see the trees, they'll see the clouds, they'll see the sun. They're lucky, they might even see the stars at night and the moon. They'll see the creatures, the insects, the birds. Every single one of those is a beautiful, exquisite manifestation of the power, the glory, and the love of God. And therefore, they are all most beloved. It's not for us to go around denigrating things and calling things names. There's no health in that. This is about healing, right? This podcast. There is no health in that approach. It actually creates a sickness. So let's do the opposite.
Like churches just need to say that. I mean, just that.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and open the doors a bit more often. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good start. I think maybe if we talk a little bit later about a vision for the church, that would come into it because why don't we just say that? Why don't we just say, you know, let's call it what it is, you know, because the whole world is mostly, there's a lot of anxiety around their bodies and there's a lot of people, you know, poking fingers at other people's bodies and people are trying to, just in terms of human beings, people are unhappy with their bodies or they don't feel they work properly and therefore they're not really fully themselves and all the other stuff that goes on. And it causes an awful lot of sadness and upset. And people comparing themselves to other people all the time, you know, I need to look like this, and so on and so forth. So let's not do that. One of the beautiful things about the Zen tradition is it says that every single being has an intrinsic value that is absolute. It's not dependent upon anybody else's opinion on it. Nobody anywhere. Every single being has an intrinsic value that is absolute. Why don't we just talk about that? If we believe that God created all things, or in St. John's Gospel, all things are made through Christ, not a single thing.
Okay, let's talk about that then. Okay, let's talk about the personal, because that is a fantastic vision and really uplifting, energizing. We're recording on a Monday morning, I think, yes, for the week ahead. But on a personal level, people have a really tough time, particularly if they've got something in their past, some abuse, some trauma. And we all know the theories about the body keeps the score. How much if we're talking about uniting our, you know, to our bodies, but our body keeps the score of past suffering, how do we move on from that? How do we truly try to find some healing from what our bodies carry?
I mean, the first thing to do is acknowledge that our bodies do carry that. They do carry pain and suffering. So not just the mind, in actual fact, but the body as well. So that's, you know, the Body Keeps the Score book is very clear about that. And that's it's a wonderful insight and has been a huge blessing to many. So first of all, I think to acknowledge that that is the case, but to also recognize perhaps to see these things, these experiences that we've had of suffering as an opportunity for wisdom, an opportunity to learn something, for each of these experiences to be a teacher for us. Now, I know it's easy to say that, And so I do know that we need some support and help with that. And there's a whole raft of different ways of getting support and help with that. But rather than sort of carrying around our sufferings and letting them, you know, kind of impinge on our happiness and this very short span that we of life that we're given, maybe if we can find a way of allowing these things to teach us and then move on with the teaching, that's of help. And of course, again, in the traditions I look at, you know, particularly yoga and Zen, there's a great deal of wisdom in them saying, well, you know, don't be attached to the past. Don't attach to it. Recognize it. Learn from it. But don't be attached to it. Don't.
What does that mean, though? What's being attached to your past mean?
And what I mean by being attached is that it sort of it becomes an encumbrance. I was thinking about this the other day, and when I thought about this, the image that came to mind was Marley. Marley, Scrooge's partner in the Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah.
So when Marley appears to Scrooge, he doesn't see him at first, he hears him. And what does he hear? He hears chains and a lot of metal rattling. And when he looks at Marley, Marley is dragging behind him miles and miles of empty cash boxes and chains. Mm. Of all of his past deeds, his wrongdoings. And that causes him huge suffering. He's dragging this stuff around with him. And it's causing him to be, you know, sad at the very least. He's always wailing and moaning. And so I think, you know, that's what I mean by being attached. So let's learn from, let us discover wisdom in these things. But let's not get so bound up and caught in them that we become completely identified with them, and then they cause us more suffering than they need to have done.
Is this sort of a bit we talked to a psychotherapist in the pod, and she highlighted to the people and I include myself in this. This is human behavior, it's nothing, you know, it's just life. People get caught in patterns. You know, for example, you know, the example she talked about, people getting stuck with abusive partners. They always go back to the same, these patterns that have deep roots in self-identity as well. Are you talking about that kind of thing, but from an understanding of it being around attachments?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you talk a lot about body-based knowing. Can you just outline what you mean by body-based knowing? What does it mean to get knowledge from our bodies if we're talking about healing from the past? Often we think about we get knowledge from books or experience or what elders tell us. What is this body-based knowing? What can the body teach us about how to be in the world?
Body-based knowing is, in some senses, kind of thoughtless knowing. So it's a knowing based on felt experience rather than a whole bunch of ideas. And so, you know, we are embodied, and that's what it is to be a human. Try being a human without having a body. Okay. I'm not saying that existence doesn't, you know, arise outside of a body, but you know, as a human being, have a body, and bodies are body, minds, and spirits are interconnected and interdependent. The body isn't, as I said, a cage in which the soul is rattling around. They are completely woven together. So the body is an exquisite, if I'm right, could be wrong, I guess, but if the body is an exquisite manifestation of love and power of God, it needs to be listened to, right? And we do listen to our bodies when they scream at us, when you've got a headache, when you've got a gut ache. You know? But other than that, don't listen. Mm. We tend to cover everything up with a whole bunch of ways of doing that.
Is this more than intuition? Because we've often talked about your trust in your gut and intuition. This seems like it's more than that.
I mean, it is intuition, but it's deeper than that. It actually requires practice. It actually requires a little bit of work on our part to listen to the body and to hear its voice, because it gets shouted down. There's an awful lot of medications and other ways of kind of shouting down the still small voice of the body.
Tell me more about how we do that well. How do we listen? We're not used to that. How do we do that?
Well, how do you listen to somebody when they're in your presence?
You shut up.
Well, how difficult, isn't it?
Pay attention.
You shut up and you pay attention.
I know. Yeah.
And you need to do that to your body so you can, you know, there's all sorts of practical ways of doing
that. Yeah.
Which can be taught, you know, through various techniques, including yoga, of course, which is, majors on that.
When I'm stressed, it always goes to my stomach, and tune in. But sometimes our bodies might be telling us something's really wrong, right? So how do you do? What's the wisdom around that?
The wisdom around listening to your body telling you there's something wrong.
Well, it might be. So I was talking to a medical doctor the other day, and one of the most difficult things to diagnose is IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, because that is so stress related. But also, sometimes the symptoms you experience might be really serious. Might be cancer, might be something, Crohn's, or a really, a medical issue that requires intervention from the medical system. I guess there is some wisdom around how we do this body-based knowing, listening in a safe way, isn't there?
It's definitely important to go to the doctor. if you feel you should. I'm certainly not suggesting that. But what I am suggesting is that we spend a bit more time listening to how we feel, and I know you can listen to how you feel after a meal. Do you feel good? Do you feel happy? Do you feel light? Do you feel fresh? Do you feel ready to go? Or do you feel absolutely stuck? Can't move, maybe get a headache afterwards. Maybe get a really dry mouth afterwards because you did too much salt in it or whatever. So these are just little things.
Putting the medical stuff aside, and that's a health warning, go to the doctor if you're worried, we've got to say that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's particularly around stress and anxiety, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
They're the things that can really hold us back from flourishing mind, body, and spirit. I had a stressful week. This is not the Gillian confessional show, but then I went for a walk in the park and I felt like I was going to cry. I didn't cry, but I was like, oh, I didn't realize I was so stressed. I went to the park, I stopped thinking, suddenly I felt like crying.
You know why?
I think I felt emotional because I was relieved that I'd stopped.
Yeah. So it's like a release, really.
Yeah.
Because you're back, because you'd reconnected with home, which is like you'd come out of your head.
Yeah.
And you'd reconnected with a greater consciousness.
Yeah.
A greater life, a greater being, which was being manifested all around you as the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the wind and the sky. You're released from the confinement of your mind and its thoughts into a greater mind and into a greater body. That's such a relief, isn't it? That's why we like to be outside in nature. That's why there's a thing called, what they call it, it's forest bathing. All forest bathing is a conscious walk in the woods. Rather than going to the woods and putting your earphones in and listening to a podcast.
Except this one.
Or going to the forest and chatting with your friend the whole way around, or going to the forest and mulling over, your life and what's good about it and what's terrible about it. Rather than doing all that, going to the forest, into the wood, anywhere, up a hill, to the beach, and just be back.
So talking about going for a walk with a friend in the forest and things like that, I'm often struck in Mindwell Ministries about your emphasis on the importance of relationship. So we're going to find holistic flourishing and tune into this bigger thing that you just described. There's a significant part of that, which is understanding that we are in relationship not only to other human beings, but the whole of creation. And as I was thinking about this morning, I remind a friend of mine told me about an African greeting she'd come across that, in England, we'll say, how are you? I'm fine, thanks. How are you? Right. And we don't mean any of it. And this African saying, or not all of it, how are you? I am well if you are well, which sort of beautifully paints a picture of actually we are in complex interrelationships with all things.
I love that. That's great.
It's beautiful, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, because it's an absolute truth, isn't it, right? I mean, it's absolutely true. Mm. I mean, we can't be well if our relationships are broken. The relationship with our personal selves, if we don't like ourselves, or if we over-like ourselves, if we don't, have an open, accepting relationship with and see, as I said earlier, that all beings everywhere are nothing other than the manifestation of God's beautiful, glorious love. So, if you know, in other words, unless we're all well, none of us are well. And you can see that anyway. That's just a piece of science, right? I mean, you know, if your foot is sick, you're sick, right? You see, you can't put your foot to one side and go, I'm fine. If your foot is giving you pain, all of you is in pain. That's the way it is. If the oceans are sick, we're all sick. If the air is sick, we're all sick. If the soil is sick, we're all sick.
Mm.
And that goes across the piece. There's no such thing as a completely, you know, as a poem goes, you know, no man is an island, you know, entire of itself. It's just a fact. It's science, let alone spirituality. So in the Zen tradition, we talk about everything is interconnected, interdependent, and impermanent. And therefore, you know, we need to realize that and have relationships that reflect that. We need each other.
Does this then lead into some kind of activism then, Ian? Because if we're talking individually, we tune into our bodies. We see our bodies as a source of knowledge about how to be and flourish. But if we're tuning into the world and we're seeing all this sickness, we're seeing the oceans are sick, the air is sick, environmental, but also, you know, we're seeing wars and conflicts and complex histories there, and we're living in this moment. Does this sense, is it just for Mind Well Ministries an acknowledgement of that it is, or does it lead into something else, some other way of being then?
Yeah, you got to do something. That's what it is to be incarnate.
you know,
nobody's sitting around just thinking about it. Nothing happens at all. So you need to do something. So, you know, and there's loads to be done. I mean, goodness knows, there's no shortage of information on what we can do to facilitate better relationships with all beings everywhere. But in the end, it's to do with the mind, and it's to do with our minds, and it's to do with our conditioning, and it's to do with not understanding the consequences of unconditional love. And they're all connected. They're all connected. So to love without condition, which I believe is the gospel, which I believe is exactly the ministry of Jesus, to love without condition, that is no quid pro quo, no what's in it for me, no looking for a return on the investment. You get out there and we love the other just as they are. Why? Because they are intrinsically beautiful.
Mm.
So we get out and we pick up plastic if we see it, and we try not to use so much plastic, and we don't eat so much meat, and there are millions of other things that are out there.
Yeah,
yes. That we can do to enable this the relationship, which is already in place. We're not creating anything new. What we're doing is we are joining in with what actually is, and that's the way forward. There's not another way. There isn't another way.
How do you avoid overwhelm? You know, because if you look in the world, there's so many things you can do, but we can't do everything. There's so many things gone wrong, but we can't fix everything. How do we avoid getting overwhelmed with all the things we should be doing and keep it focused on our health and healing in the world?
All you can do, Jen, is what you can do as you. In some senses, it's an act of humility, right? You know, but, I mean, here am I, Ian, and I've only got a certain amount of energy and a certain amount of power within this body of mine and a certain mental capacity. So just do what you can do, because every, this is just my view, again, I could be wrong, but I believe that every single loving act, every act of compassion, every act that is an acknowledgement of all things being sacred, none of that goes missing. None of that is lost. It all helps to build on what Christians would call the kingdom of God, which is already here. It's just that we're picking it to pieces rather than playing a part in strengthening it. So do what you can. So when a fly lands, if you get a little fly buzzing in your head, a fly taught me a massive lesson a few years ago. I was trying to type something up. It was a sermon, and a fly kept bashing into the screen of the computer. There would have been a time when I'd chase it around the room with a rolled-up newspaper tried to get rid of it that way. But instead of that, I just watched it, right? I watched it, and it was hitting my screen, and then it was flying to a window that was closed. So I went and opened the window, and it went out. And I released it. And I felt really good about myself. I thought, good. She's managed to get out, and she's gone home. A tiny, what is that? Well, honestly, in a world, in a universe as big and as complex and on Earth as violent as ours, how can letting a fly out the window make a difference? Gillian, it makes a difference. Don't be overwhelmed. Do what you can. Small things, small for every act of love, no matter how small, is enough. The widow's mite in the gospel was enough. Just do that.
So as we're drawing to a close, Ian, give us one thing we can do to tune into a body-based way of knowing today.
Okay, I think the simple thing, is it simple? It is. It's simple, not easy. I'd suggest the place to start is to love yourself. I mean, be deeply compassionate. When you look in the mirror in the morning, go, do you know what? What a beautiful creation. Okay. It doesn't matter what the papers say you're supposed to look like. It doesn't matter what you think you should look like, which is only really a compilation of what other people have said and done. Forget all of that. It's all not right. Just be compassionate to yourself, to your own body, which is exquisite, to your own mind, which is exquisite. Remarkable thing is a mind. And take it from there. Because as Jesus said, if you love yourself, I think it's what that love just spills out and flows out. It's not stoppable, and it flows into your neighbor. It flows into the fly. It flows into the, you know, the natural environment. It flows into the person at Tesco's checkout when you know, older, wherever you go, Waitrose, whenever money takes you. You know, it's because that's the way it is. So if you love yourself in the way I'm describing, then you will not be able to not love other people and all beings everywhere. That's the place to start.
Ian, thank you so much. I'm grinning from ear to ear. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And you've been a real blessing, I think, on the Go Health podcast, helping us bring everything to a close and giving us actual to-dos, right, that can change the world even. And for me, I'm a little girl, even in the little checkout queue.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm an old boy, so there you go.
We're going to be picking up the conversation over in the Go Health community. We've been journaling our way through the series, so log in now to find all the latest resources or join and get a free journal and access to our whole catalogue, including our Burn Like Star season and our online trauma course. Thank you to Rosie Dawson, who is our producer, and Wendy Lloyd from the Go Health team for all her work on this series and the podcast. Please do hit share and like. Let others know about our work, the work of the Go Health community, where together we seek to flourish and be healing presences in the world today. Ian, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for inviting me.